Mr. Moran, crawled underneath his ex-wife's house, cut her sewer pipe, filled it with expandable foam, and glued it back together, causing the sewer to back up into the house.
On Christmas Day.
Yes, shortly before Christmas Day. Yes, causing the backup on Christmas Day. In order to prove that Mr. Moran committed residential burglary, the state was required to show that Mr. Moran had entered a dwelling. A dwelling is defined as a building or structure or portion thereof which is used or ordinarily used by a person for lodging. It is our position here that
What does the record tell us about how many structures were on the lot?
I believe the record shows that there was a house and a garage on the lot. There is also a fenced dog run. To get to the area that Mr. Moran went into, he would have needed to remove the lattice work that was underneath the porch that was attached to the house, crawl under the deck, and then remove a cover and go under the house. However, it's our position, as I said, that in doing so, he was underneath the house. He did not actually enter the dwelling.
If there had been Christmas decorations stored in boxes in that space, would you give us a different answer?
I think that if there had been Christmas decorations, that would present less of a clear-cut case. I think that that would possibly, if there were things stored down there, it would be less apparent that this case is so different than the cases cited by the state.
Okay, now, if it provides access to the plumbing and other things that sometimes people need to repair, how does that affect your answer?
And certainly in that case, in this case, it appears that that was true, that there was access to the plumbing and other things needed for repair. But that is different than using the space for habitation, storing things down there, or for instance, doing your laundry down there. Simply having access. So
the house, was the garage attached or detached?
You know, I would have to look back. I can't tell you for sure.
Let's just put the garage aside. So you've got the living area of the house. You've got an attic. Let's say you can't get the living area from the attic. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the area that's at issue here. Is that three structures?
No. I would not say that that's three structures. Simply because you can't get to the attic from the living area does not make it a separate structure.
Well, and doesn't it have to be three structures for your argument to prevail?
No, I don't think it does. I don't think that it has to be three structures in order for what I'm saying to prevail, because it's not just a matter of, a lot of the case law talks about whether or not there is access from the living area to the space at issue. But
let's talk about the definition in the statute.
Okay.
Dwelling means any building or structure or a portion thereof which is used or ordinarily used by a person for lodging. Are you saying that used or ordinarily used modifies portion thereof rather than building or structure?
No.
So
I'm saying
if this was a house and there's only one structure,
yes,
isn't the house ordinarily used by a person for lodging?
Yes, but this was not
so
part of the house.
Well, I understand, okay. but it's not a part of that. It's not a portion of the house.
Your Honor, I would say that this is the space.
Now you're back to three structures, right? If it's not a portion of the house, it must be its own structure.
And maybe I misunderstood. When you were asking me that question, was Your Honor suggesting to me that the attic was a separate structure?
Oh, yeah. It would be if you couldn't get there. So it would be three structures. The attic, the underneath part, and the part where somebody lives. So that's three structures.
You're right. I'm sorry. I was thinking about whether or not the attic would be considered a dwelling. I apologize. Thank you for
to rule in your favor, we'd have to conclude that constituted three structures, right?
Well, I think that, let me think about this for a second. Certainly the attic space would be classified as a dwelling. I don't think it necessarily matters here whether or not this space is a separate structure, because the issue is that this space is not part of the dwelling.
Well, no, the issue is
so how's that true? How do you support the main floor? Doesn't float in space.
It doesn't. That's true. It doesn't float in space.
So why isn't it all one structure?
The reason it's not one structure is because If you look at the case law.
Let's look at the definition.
Okay. I'm looking at the definition. I have it right in front of me.
Yeah. I've got a photograph. It's got a house on it.
Yes.
And the main floor is obviously up from the porch, and there's an enclosed area. It's got a porch on top. And I ask you, how many dwellings appear in this picture? What's your answer?
I would say that there's one dwelling in that photograph.
Now I ask you, how many structures are in this photograph?
I think that is less clear question under the law.
Really?
Well, I mean, I guess what I would say
is... I stopped 10 people who were college educated and could read a dictionary, and I asked how many structures in this photograph. How many of them do you think would give me an answer different than one?
Well, that's different. I guess what I'm saying is that in terms of how we look at residential burglary is different than the average person might look at a house or a structure when they see it on the street.
Don't we run into some due process problems if we start giving these words something other than their ordinary meaning?
No, I mean, I think the due process concern is when we decide that we're going to start punishing people for basically crawling under a dwelling instead of going inside it. I think that's the problem. That this is an issue of, this is a case of residential burglary. There's good public policy.
Under Judge Dwyer's house, yes. In the middle of the night, start making noises. Do you think he would lean to his wife and say, I think somebody broke into that part of our structure that's not part of our dwelling?
Well, I doubt he would use those words. Maybe he would,
don't
because he's a judge.
Someone but into our house?
I don't know if he would say someone broke into our house or that there's concern that someone's actually under the house. I think those are two different things.
I told Judge Leach to stop doing that. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. It pleases the court. Seth Fine, representing the respondent, the State of Washington. The basic test for deciding whether an area is part of a dwelling is laid out by this court in State v. Neal, and it looks to the use of the building as a whole. If the building as a whole is devoted, or is, excuse me, in the language of the statute, is used or ordinarily used for lodging, then every part of the building is part of the dwelling. If the building as a whole is ordinarily used for some other purpose, but some particular portion is used for lodging, then only that portion is a dwelling. Here, we are clearly dealing with a building that, as a whole, is used for lodging, and therefore the use of any individual portion is immaterial. So it actually does not matter what use was made of this. I'd call it a foundation area. You can call it a crawl space if you prefer. The question is simply, is it part of the same building, or is it a separate building? Now, this court has not specifically laid out a test for that.
Looking at the definitions, isn't the first thing that should be done is the determination of how many structures are here?
Yes.
And then once it's determined how many structures are here, make a determination as to whether the use of any of those structures was ordinarily used by a person for lodging.
Well,
and then the third question would be, did the defendant enter, if the answer to the yes, did they enter a structure that defines that? Why are we so caught up in case law and all of this?
Well, yeah.
It's because it's what we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we do, and there are, in fact, cases which indicate that, you know, an outbuilding, something that is not physically attached, may be part of the dwelling if it's functionally related. But obviously, that's not the case we have here.
But that's the flip side. Once you say there's only one structure, haven't you, and people are using that structure for lodging, haven't you answered the question of whether it's a dwelling?
Yes. Yes, you have. In this case, you know, cases from other jurisdictions have used
Standalone tool shed, separate structure, not part of the dwelling. If that same standalone tool shed is adjacent to the house and has bolts drilled into the house, it is?
Well, in light of the case law from other jurisdictions, I don't think I'm prepared to concede that a standalone tool shed is not part of the dwelling.
Well,
again, that's not what we have here.
The dangerousness of using cases from other jurisdictions is we don't necessarily know what the statutory definitions of things are.
That's correct. Some of these have significantly different definitions, as some of them have the same. And if you look, and if we put aside case law from other jurisdictions and look at the statute, the first question is how many structures? And the answer is one. And you know, that answer is borne out by the case law in other jurisdictions, which has said that you know, something that's under the same roof and enclosed by the same walls is part of the building. And you know, the appellate's case seems to rest on two critical distinctions, or they maintain that they're critical. You know, number one, that this portion of the building was, or this area, I guess I will say, you know, to put less of a conclusion on the question, this area is not specifically used for lodging. And number two, that there's no direct access between that and the rest of the residence. You know, number one is an immaterial distinction in light of Neal, and number two is not a distinction that any courts have considered significant. You know, every court from another jurisdiction, and I submit this court as well, should say, if it's physically integrated, it's the same building.
Her sentiment, or her the rationale behind counsel's argument, though, is that the principle underlying the creation of residential burglary as a separate crime of burglary is the danger created by people entering into living space, and that the application of that crime to these facts doesn't further the underlying reason for the existence of the crime in the first place. What's your response to her argument?
Well, my response is, you know, number one, you know, the same kind of fears and dangers are created by going into any area that is physically incorporated with the building, and number two, doing so places the same kind of threat to the peaceful habitation of the building. And let's compare this with a bathroom. You know, nobody sleeps in a bathroom, yet a functioning bathroom is necessary for the building to be habitable. And the purpose of this foundation area is to enclose sewage piping and to allow access to them for maintenance and repairs. And as this case illustrates, tampering with those pipings causes just as much harm to the residents as tampering with someone in the bathroom. And in fact, they are physically connected, because when you go through these pipes, you're essentially inside the building. You know, you go through the pipes and there's no more space separating you. There is no longer a physical separation between that and the fixtures inside the house. And of course, the defendant actually cut into the pipes. He physically intruded in theirs. So not only do we have the physical integration, but in fact, we have a functional integration. This area is just as necessary for the comfort and satisfying the personal needs of the occupants of this residence as, you know, the bathroom, the kitchen, or any other area.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, you have to read these words as they are written, as a ordinary person would interpret them, given, you know, in the absence of any specific statutory interpretation. And I think it's been remarked, you know, nobody would walk by this, see the house in the garage, and say, you know, look at the three structures on this lot. There's one house, the defendant broke into it with intent to commit a crime. He was properly convicted of residential burglary.
Thank you.
Thank you. One thing I would like to respond to is the state's argument that there's essentially the same kind of danger between a bathroom and going in under a house. I think, you know, we'd submit to the court that that danger there is completely different, and that this isn't a matter of whether somebody's entering the bedroom versus the living room. If they're coming into the living space, that is completely different than tampering with the pipes under the building or the dwelling.
Do you think the response in the middle of the night is going to be different? I hear somebody underneath my bedroom floor or at my bedroom door?
Underneath your bedroom floor, but also in part of your house, maybe not
in my crawl space. I hear somebody down there. Is my response going to be any different?
I believe the response would be different. I think that the response...
Aren't I going to be equally concerned for my safety?
I think that you're going to be as concerned for your safety as, at that point as you would if you found someone, say, in your fenced yard. I think that that is a much better analogy, that that would be your level of fear at that point. If someone is in that space or in perhaps a fenced-off area, they have intruded. Our argument certainly is not here that there was not a burglary. They just have not intruded into the dwelling space of the house that people consider private and offer much greater protection than, for instance, a yard or underneath the house.
I think the people in the Midwest that go down under the house for safety from hurricanes and tornadoes are going to share your view?
I think that that's probably a different situation to some degree, because those people probably have a lot of things stored down there in preparation. But, I mean, this really isn't one of those situations. This isn't anything like a basement.
Suppose the homeowner confronted the intruder in the crawl space underneath there. And you were representing the homeowner because he used force against the intruder. Your argument would not be that the use of force was the use of force that was allowed for someone confronted by an intruder in their own home?
Well, Your Honor, I think that also raises issues of, ethics to a client and being a good defense attorney.
What would be wrong with that argument?
Would that be a meritorious argument to make?
I think that the argument, if you're under a crawl space like that, is much more akin to if the person happened upon the intruder in their yard.
So if I go into the crawl space of my house...
You don't think it's creepier having somebody in your crawl space than in your yard?
I certainly think it's a lot less creepy than having them in your living room or in your bathroom or anywhere in your actual house.
So my obligation when I hear someone under the house is to yell at them to run away. I don't have any ability to go in there.
I think that that's a different question than the question we're asking today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And court is in recess.